Oh, wow.
Welcome back. WNST. Taos in Baltimore. Do you have to pee, Rasik?
No, I'm good.
We're in the neighborhood.
Normally I do. I'm 71.
Well, drink less beer. I shouldn't say that at Coco's Pub. It's Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's all presented by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. Max Stoll. My lottery ticket that I gave her, so she didn't really steal it. She pilfered it. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We had lucky winners. The Crab Cake Tour, this is the weird thing about the Orioles. I have suspended the Crab Cake. This is the last Crab Cake Tour I'm doing for a little while.
Oh.
I can't plan anything. It's playoff baseball,
right.
Max.
Right,
Max Weiss is here from Baltimore Magazine. She's the editor-in-chief. Not editor and chief. It's one of those malaprops that we like to have fun with. Editor and chief. And Rasik, of course, my co-host with the K, because we're Coco's. These are the coconut shrimp. I thought it was spelled wrong because it's spelled with a K, and then I realized, oh, it's Coco's. So I want to put the shrimp here. Max, I want you to talk about your magazine, because I didn't give you a chance to talk about this. And more than that, I pimped your Best of Baltimore, which I didn't win again this year. And I'll probably
but
never
win
because I've offended everybody.
He didn't want to win.
It's fine. I just say that. I'm really
you
hurt.
Really do want to win.
No,
you mean you really do want to win? Oh, my God. I've had it wrong.
I didn't really want to win.
This whole time.
You know what I don't want to do? I don't want to lobby to win. So if I ever win, I'll know it's because I deserve it.
Sacre bleu. You lobby?
I'm not good at lobbying.
Yeah, no.
I'd be a lobbyist.
Yeah. You'd be great at it, actually.
So we did this bandwagon thing on the Orioles, right?
Right,
we did Best of Baltimore, where you're like me. Like, what's the best crab cake? The one I'm eating. They're all delicious. Oh, those are the best coconut shrimp in the city. I promise you that.
I think Coco's has the best. Coco's and Fadley's. Those are the two best crab cakes.
You really wanted to talk more. Well, here, give me these. I'm going to eat these. Take one.
If I'm allowed.
You did a piece on the BSO.
Right, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra.
And you know of my love of music, whether it was Kicks last week, right, or Peter Gabriel this week, or Nile Rodgers and Chic at Artscape this week. Like, I love music. You are, like, a legit musician.
Yes.
You're a cellist. Yes. I mean, I give you a hard time and kid you about it, but this is up your alley with the symphony orchestra and the importance of it. And am I wrong in saying at various points it's been teetering from a financial standpoint, right? In a lot of ways. Maryn Alsat lived in my building. So I didn't really know Maryn at all, but I knew of her. Never really spent any time with her.
Oh, you would have loved her.
Update me on the symphony, because you did this beautiful piece. They have a new conductor. I mean, there is some mojo involved with the BSO right now, right?
Yeah. You know, I was disappointed when Maryn Alsop stepped down because I love her. You know, she was the first female conductor of a major American symphony orchestra, and she was a great innovator, and she's truly one of my heroes. So when she stepped down, I was disappointed. But the person that they hired in her place is, like, so perfect. I mean, if you could draw somebody in a lab to be the perfect Baltimore Symphony Orchestra conductor at this moment in time, it would be Jonathan Hayward. He is young, he is black, he is dynamic, he gets that people don't understand classical music or might feel that it's a little stuffy and they don't feel like they're at home at the Meyerhoff, and he wants to welcome it. He wants people young, old, of all races. He wants young people learning to love classical music and teaching it in the public schools. He is so committed to making music accessible. But he's also just this he's a star. You know, like, I spent a lot of time with him, wrote this feature, which you can read at baltimoremagazine.com. And
what is his background? Give me a little story about him.
He was born and raised in South Carolina, and he came from a poor family, and he picked up the cello at...
That's why you love him. He was a cellist.
Well,
I was going to ask you what his first instrument was.
That's right.
Or whatever.
That's a very good question. Almost all conductors started as an instrumentalist. That would have been a good question. So he played the cello, and he basically just kind of picked it up randomly, started playing it, liked it, wasn't that good. Ended up going to a school for the arts, very similar to the Baltimore School for the Arts, and he was a star. And he just kept getting better and better, and then one day the teacher was out, and he stepped in to conduct, you know, one of those kinds of moments, and found that he had a real talent and affinity for conducting. And then he went on to the Boston Conservatory and the Royal Academy of Music, and he's 31 years old.
Wow.
And he is now conducting one of the major symphonies in the United States. But as you say, symphonic orchestras are struggling in this country. They're struggling for relevancy. Their audiences are down. He instantly makes the BSO more relevant. There is so much more excitement and interest in the organization because of him. People want to see him. They want to see what he's all about. And when you see him on stage, he's actually very animated. He's exciting. He's fun to watch. And I spoke to many of the musicians in the orchestra, and they love him. He's just so musical. They say music just oozes from
his
pores.
How many people are in the orchestra? Give or take. I mean,
about 100.
About 100. Yeah. Okay. So of these 100 people, and I know you're perfect to talk to about this because you know some of these people. How many of them have been in the BSO for 10, 20 years? I mean, like, give me I don't know any of them. I mean,
yeah.
Like, and again, it's one of those things, like, if you're an 8-year-old girl and you're learning to play the cello, I'm not saying that's a little odd or different in our culture, but it's not like playing the drums or the guitar in the Foo Fighters band or, you know, something like that. There is a point where, like, picking up that kind of music as a young person, it takes a special sort of environment for that to happen. I had Thomas Dolby on the show recently talking about, but the young kids in the city, they're all into hip-hop. You know what I mean? They're into music, but not that kind of music, right?
Well, partly it's exposing young people to that kind of music, giving them an opportunity. Partly it's not making it stuffy. You know, like, you can combine hip-hop with classical music. You can take popular music and perform it on these classical instruments. You can learn about jazz. There's all these different genres. It's sort of like with dance. You know, you can take ballet, but you can also take contemporary. You can also take hip-hop. You can also take jazz. And more we're seeing that like, one thing that they're doing now with a lot of young musicians in Baltimore City is they're incorporating gospel music into what they're learning. So just anything to give somebody a connection to the music. But it really, for me, it's all about access, you know? Let them play the cello, play the trumpet, play the oboe, whatever it may be, and get that experience.
I played the French horn. I didn't like
it. That is a hard instrument.
Yeah, my grandfather played the trumpet. I mean, my grandfather played the bugle at the racetrack.
Yeah.
My grandfather was an incredible musician. He had a band, like, all my life, and he lived into his 90s, and, you know, he played music in the Marines. But he wanted me to play the French horn. And in 1976... you know, like, playing the bass guitar or like, trying to be Peter Frampton was more where I was, right? Like, the French horn did not fit into the band in my neighborhood, right? So, you know, I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, when you pick up traditional symphonic instruments, any, I mean, my wife played the flute or the you know, the clarinet. They're beautiful instruments, but...
Well, Ian Anderson, Jethro Tull, you know.
Playing the flute.
So. I hate Jethro Tull, but I understand what you're saying.
Come on.
But even like the saxophone, being in Springsteen's band or in Bob Seger, you know, there were some brassy elements in some popular music. But some of the instruments are a little bit hard, and I think also, I'm not young, so I don't know what's hip and what's not hip at this point. But trying to make Star Wars or having the BSO do something that makes Rasig and Terry and me and my wife want to go down and hear the music. I got coconut shrimp everywhere.
A lot of it is getting people into the Meyerhoff. For me, and Jonathan Hayward, you know, he agrees with this, it's letting people understand that it's okay to enjoy the music. If something funny happens, you can laugh. If you love something, you can cheer. Like, this idea that you have to sort of sit there with your hands in your
lap.
Like,
it's ballet.
Like, well, but even ballet doesn't want to be that way anymore.
Right.
Like, the way baseball has sort of changed? Because you can't continue to be your father's and your grandfather's baseball. It doesn't fit into our sensibilities in the 21st century. It's the same with classical music, you know? We want to bring young people in to hear classical music. We want them to understand that all of humanity is contained within these pieces, which means sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're sad, sometimes they're happy, sometimes they're exciting, you know, and if you can just sort of understand that classical music really contains all of life, you can really start to love it. So, you know, that. So to me, a lot of it has to do with exposure. But it's also, you know, they definitely, as you've noticed, they're bringing other kinds of music into the Meyerhof. They're bringing other kinds of musicians. Dan Deacon is out there, you know, and various other people. Trying to get people to say like, the Meyerhof is my hall. It's not just my grandparents' and my parents' hall. It's my hall. I can go in there. I have some ownership of that space. Nice. So that's what they're trying to do.
Well, I always love going to the Meyerhof.
Yeah, me too.
I'm down there.
It's
wonderful. So I'd love to have Jonathan on and talk some music with me and teach me some stuff, you know?
I mean, you would love him. He's just a really, really cool guy. He's just friendly, loves Baltimore. And he's like hip, you know? He wears Converse sneakers.
Well, this is why I love having you on, because you, like at Baltimore Magazine, you have this wide scope of things you can write about or talk about. And the Orioles get good, and you write this bandwagon piece that people are reading and sort of an essay. At what point does the BSO have a new orchestra leader, and you're like, we got to do something on him at some point, that you get these stories into sort of a queue? And at what point there's something like the Oriole bandwagon thing, that has to be done right now.
That's right.
It's like talking about the Colts has to be this week, next week doesn't help us, you know. But for you with the Oriole thing, at what point does that become a good idea?
No, that's
when does a beer and a conversation become I'm going to write about that?
No, that's a really good question, because we have two platforms, essentially. We have our website, and we have our print magazine. And the print magazine...
They're different.
Right. Comes out 12 times a year. We plan it pretty far in advance. You know, we have something called a storyboard, and we have a storyboard meeting, and we sit down, and, you know, we have people who read Baltimore Magazine regularly know that we have certain months that are designated for certain things. Like, August is always going to be Best of Baltimore. March is always going to be Best Restaurants. November is always going to be Top Doctors. The rest of the months are kind of open. It's a little more loose. And so we sit around and we sort of try to figure out what stories go in what slots. And it usually takes two or three times, but we end up filling a large portion of that board. So for me, the Jonathan Hayward thing was a no-brainer, because I love writing about classical music and thinking about it. It was the new BSO Maestro. You're going to want to find that time hook. So his season starts in September. So it just made perfect sense for me to do that. Now,
I love time hook.
Time hook.
We're always looking
for a time hook.
I've never used that phrase, but I always use that technology.
Right.
I know what it is. Like, when I say to a charity, hey, your golf tournament's October 23rd, I want to have you on the show first week of October.
Exactly.
So I can talk about it in a timely fashion. So anyway, time hook. I love that.
Time hook.
Right. And for us, there's kind of two kinds of stories. There are time hook stories and there are evergreen stories. An evergreen story means we can slot it into any month. It's not... doesn't have to be that particular month, and we try to have like a balance of them, but for the most part, most of the stories you'll see there is like a reason. You know, we're going to say, oh, it's the 20th anniversary of this, or it's a particular month, you know, Women's Health Month, whatever. You know, we're going to write about that, or, you know, we're going to write about Adley Rutschman in April because it's the beginning of the Orioles season. Stuff like that. Now, when
be writing about Jackson Holliday next April,
right?
Probably the April after that, I'm going to say.
No way.
Well,
next April, it's all going to be Gunner.
It's Gunner. It is. Yeah. You're right. It's going to be Gunner. And then it's going to be Jackson.
Okay,
Now you're thinking like an editor.
Right.
Or Felix, by the way. Felix Batista, like, he just came out.
I did run a radio station with, like, I know I don't look like much, but, like, I had to plan stuff. I worked at the Sun. Every night we had budget. They called them budget meetings.
They had
nothing to do with money. Budget was, like, the budget of open space. What we were going to do with how we were going to budget the open space. The ads, we hated the ads, right? They were the only thing that paid us. We didn't know that. I didn't know that at 17. But the ads were the important thing, but not to the editor-in-chief. There's an ad on page 28. I'm going to have a story about a new chef on page 27.
Right. We don't pay
attention. By the way, who's a new chef? I saw that.
This is Chef Ashish Alfred.
I saw his picture, and I've heard of him, but I wasn't sure what the restaurant was.
It's, is it Duck Duck Goose?
Yes, that's correct.
I've eaten there. That's good.
And, you know, he's we call him a sober ambassador. He is clean.
Mm-hmm.
He has introduced all these really interesting mocktails in his restaurant.
They offered me one here at Coco's.
And look,
I said, what is that?
Look how cool he looks, like with his tattoos and stuff. I mean, he's very cool looking, and he's like a serious French chef. So he's got, I think he has two restaurants in Fells Point now. He's got the Duck Duck Goose, and he's got a new Italian restaurant as well. But he's got some real chops. But, you know, one of the reasons why he's on the cover is partly because he looks cool with his tattoos. And you know he looks like? You know Key and Peele?
No.
You don't know Key and Peele?
No.
The comedians?
No.
Well, he looks like Key.
I thought there was a movie thing.
People who know will know. Anyway.
God, I've had you on an hour and we haven't said anything about movies.
I know. Where's Don when I
Where's
need him?
Where's Alan? The movie man.
Right.
Oh, right. I love Alan. He's very nice. Anyway, so the cover story is called The Tastemakers. This is the current issue that's on newsstands right now.
This one right here. Let's hold it up. There you go.
Yeah. Hold that up.
And
I thought that was Carlos Raba for a minute when I saw it, and then I realized it wasn't because I was at Wise last night shopping, and I saw it at the checkout. Yeah. And Steve Show, I've been trying to get Steve from Ekabin on, and like it's become a thing. Like my thing with you, where I don't. Hey, that's Nancy. Look at that. Yeah. That's Nancy Devine.
I love this picture of Nancy.
Well, I love Nancy.
She emanates warmth. Do you know what I mean?
She's just, old school.
She's just this kind of person where you see a picture of her and you have to smile back at it. It's like a Pavlovian reaction to see.
I've gotten to know her and she loves me, so it's even different, like our affection.
How about these guys? Ekibon.
So Steve. Steve, I'm looking for you. You keep spending time with her. Steve, I eat your broccoli. I love your broccoli. I love your food. I'm a neighborhood bird guy.
Ah, delicious.
Gosh, is there...
No, I mean...
So I got to tell you this.
People are addicted to Ekibon food. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Right? Yeah.
Have you been to Ekibon?
No, we're
not
looking at it the other day.
You got to go.
Okay.
So here's the thing. Last Friday, I went to the Adam Jones game. I admitted that to you guys, right? I went alone. The game was not on Apple. I was at the Nest. Went to the game. The game was 7-0.
Oh,
they were getting no hit.
That was
right?
a bummer.
Kerstad hits the home run. It's the 8th inning. They're going to lose. I'm leaving. It's 7-1. I was tired. Right. I got up early in the morning. I did the show with Nancy and Fadley's that morning, right? Literally.
Beautiful.
So I had a long, long day.
Yeah.
And it's about 8:35, 8:40. Orioles getting their ass kicked. I got to leave. I don't spend any money at the ballpark. It's an Angelo's thing.
A point of personal pride.
It is a personal issue for me.
Okay. Sure.
So I'm not eating anything in there. And I'm thinking, what am I going to get? I'm driving back home toward Towson.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I wonder how late Ekibon's open. And this is me being a Baltimore idiot, thinking like they close at 9 o'clock. They close at 11, right?
Nice.
So I look on my phone and I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get some broccoli.
Yeah.
So I go to Hamden. I order on my app. I get there. I go in. And there's a picture of me that I sent to my wife. And I'm sitting there eating broccoli with chopsticks with all my Oreo swag on, right?
The tempura broccoli.
Tempura broccoli.
Right.
It's
wow. right.
It, yeah. No offense to the shrimp here. It's delicious, Marcella. Everybody,
it was
but
very
like,
good.
So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, what has my life become? I am sitting here feeling guilty and dirty about eating broccoli, fried broccoli on my own at 9:30 at night. And like it's a secret. Like it's my little dirty little secret that I eat broccoli for dinner. Like it's weird.
Well,
I never thought it would come to this.
I'm sure you guys know the story about when they drove
to Vermont.
Oh, it's
unbelievable.
To make the tempura broccoli.
Because it's that good.
It's right.
So it was a final request from a dying woman.
Right, that's right. There was a woman who had been in Baltimore.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
She was a huge Ekibon lover.
These are
she moved
serious
to,
people.
To, right, these are like good people. So she moved to Minnesota. I'm not sure if it was Minneapolis or St. Paul, wherever it was. And she was dying. And she wanted to taste the tempura broccoli one last time. And damned if the guys who owned Ekibon did not get in their car, bring a little fryer,
unbelievable.
And drive.
An incredible story.
I know. These are like incredible. So when you're eating at Ekibon, it's not just like yummy. It's like these are really good people, you know?
And it's yummy.
Go. Yeah.
So it's just coconut shrimp with a K.
Yeah.
Really good.
Absolutely great, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I love Ekibon. And I love that you feature these people.
Yeah.
Even ones like Steve who dodged me. I think he thinks I'm a weirdo. I met him at the Best of Baltimore party last year, and I went up to him, and I told him how much I love him.
You scared him?
I think I frightened him off. It was like going to go a little too strong with a girl at Skateland back in the day. You know, it's like, don't answer the number right away. You know what I mean? So, Steve, I'm here for you, man. I want to do the crab cake tour in Ekibon. I want to do the broccoli tour. I want to do the tempura broccoli tour.
Wow.
Now, that's a good question. What should your next tour be?
Okay.
Oh, right.
Oysters.
Oh, I love oysters.
Oh, so last week, I was at Fadley's doing a show in the morning. And I had this, I've done 30 crab cakes and 31 crab cakes in 31 days. This is my 25th anniversary. I wanted to honor that with 25 oysters in 25 days. And I had picked this month to do it because the Ravens threw me out. I'm not traveling, you know.
Right.
And then the Orioles and like life And I'm like, I'm not going to do it now. I'm going to do it like, I'm going to do it in the winter, maybe like in February or March. But this was the rule. And you need to help me with this.
Okay.
You're the perfect person.
Okay.
As we look at Spike Jurdy here.
Yeah.
I want to do 25 oysters in 25 days, but I want to do them 25 different ways.
Wow. Mm.
And I want to find creative, because at Fadley's, she brought me a fried oyster about a year and a half ago. It was right, maybe even during the plague. I did the show down there. And she's always trying to, like, bring, she's, it's Nancy's daughter. You can only imagine. You love Nancy.
Yeah.
Her daughter, Dami, has all the same
attributes.
Right.
Okay.
So Dami brings me food in the show, and it gets stuck in my teeth, and I spit it at people. It's terrible. Part of the Crab Cake Tour's charm. And she brought me oysters, and I ate, it was fried oysters. I don't want to say I've never eaten a fried oyster. Like I don't, maybe I have. I've never ordered it.
Really?
I wouldn't go in the,
never been to
New
Orleans.
Well, it's like Coco's, right? Like, people
poor
come in
boy.
Here.
Poor boy.
Poor boy, yeah.
They have ribs here. They have burgers here. They have chicken. People get the crab cake, right?
Right.
So, and if I didn't get the crab cake, I would get the burger. I would get the shrimp, or I would get some, it's never, if I want oysters, I would get them Rockefeller, or I would get them raw. I wouldn't order them that way. And they were so yummy.
Mm, yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I got to figure out new ways to do this.
Chef Wolf at Charleston.
Cindy, yeah.
If you want some good oysters, man, some fried oysters, her fried oysters are the best in town. Like, yes, it's expensive to go to Charleston, but if you sit at the bar and you have a drink and you get a plate of fried oysters,
yeah, it's going to rock my world.
It's going to set you back $30, but it's going to be so worth it because they will rock your world. So, yes, fried oysters, amazing. She should definitely be part of
the tour. I want oyster stew. I want...
Oyster stew is great. How about roast oysters? Have you ever had roasted oysters? Like,
no.
Roasted on an open flame?
Ah, char grilled with the butter and the garlic and the Parmesan.
Well, that's one way of doing them, which is delicious. Yeah.
Spinach, some oysters,
yeah, well,
Rockefeller.
Now you're having Rockefeller, yeah. Just... roasted oysters are it's something that I first had in New Orleans because they sell it a lot there. It is so yummy.
All right, I'm down.
And
so I need new ideas for some eating. So guess what? The next tour I gave it to you. It's going to be oysters. And part of the oysters
idea.
Is the recovery and how they power the bay and how they keep the water clean. And that's how we get crabs. No oysters, no crabs.
I know you have tried to get my senior editor Lydia Williver on the show a
few
times.
She's camera shy.
Yeah, a little bit. But she is the oyster queen of Baltimore. So if you want to, maybe...
Why is she afraid of me? Is it because I lobbied to be best of Baltimore, but not really?
No, I think, you know, not everybody loves to go on radio and TV. You know?
But she's smart. She's a great writer. She knows things.
She's cute. She's way cuter than I am. And she's a brilliant writer.
All right, I'm going to try to make friends with her.
Yeah, we should have come to the best of party. Actually, she didn't come this year. So
she was
mind.
A Barry Manilow. All right, are we done promoting things? You keep fingering through the magazine.
No, look, I just figured if I flip, you
want
might...
to promote the Smith Brothers? What do you want to do? You want to promote Steve?
So
what do you want to do?
It's exciting.
I've done the crab cake there.
I think this is an amazing issue. It's the tastemakers. It's the leaders of the Baltimore food scene. We have Lane Harlan.
See, there's Carlos. See, I told you. Carlos is one of my people. He's Latin.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let him cover the sports of the Ravens.
Well, and Carlos is like Steve from Ekibon. They're like cut.
They do things These together. They do pop-ups together.
But I'm talking about their physiques. These are like guys who are ripped.
Well, Carlos has a gym above his joint, man.
Well, yeah. So there you go.
You been to Clavel?
Yes. Very good. Yeah.
Very, very good. Yeah.
Very good.
Baltimore's great. Isn't Baltimore great?
It's the best.
The best of Baltimore.
Oh, you could do a taco tour. As a matter of fact, in the next issue of Baltimore Magazine, so we're talking about the November
taco
issue,
good.
Our research editor, Amy Scattergood, is an incredible taco lover and taco expert. She's from L.A., and she goes to all the little taco places where they don't speak English.
And Broadway.
Broadway, right.
Right.
Fells Point, Upper Broadway, Highland Town.
Everything's spicy in these joints. Watch it.
She tells you what to order, what's delicious. And I think it's going to be so wonderful for people. Like, if you've always sort of wanted to try one of these places, but you didn't know what to order, you know, you just weren't sure. So it's just this wonderful taco tour. And there are some great tacos.
Well, why don't you get her on the show with me?
Well, okay.
Why is it always you and Ron that has to do this?
Because we're the loud ones. We're the loud ones.
Teitelbaum, I looked for him this morning. I didn't see him. I was going to like make nice and say.
Oh, he likes to talk. He's like me. He likes the sound of his, and you, sound of his voice.
Teitelbaum, my favorite thing that he always likes telling people is he created my first website, and he did.
This is my my boss.
He created
is the president of Baltimore
Michael Teitelbaum's
Magazine.
Good man.
Yeah.
He did my first website at Imagination.
That's okay.
Back in the day.
Right, he did that. That is
worked
correct.
In the Pikesville Hilton, and I went out there. I had a GeoCities webpage.
Nice.
You've got mails.
Yes.
Max Weiss is here. She's the editor-in-chief. I've been eating all the coconut seam shrimp, or excuse me, coconut shrimp with the K. Mike Versigliano is a great sports artist and cartoonist, and Max writes.
Max, how were you able to kind of discuss cultural and other serious topics with Nestor wearing that hat the way he's wearing it? I don't know how you managed that.
I think it's fetching.
You want to promote Window Nation? 866-90-NATION. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery as well. My mouth's full now. They got me talking. They bring me food. What can I do? I got to eat it. Right? It's getting cold.
It's not professional, to be honest, Nestor. I'm just saying.
This
is why I don't win Best of Baltimore.
This is what I also found
out.
Wearing a hat in a restaurant is also very taboo, you know?
It's the on-air mastication.
Look at him. Look, he's wearing a hat.
I wear it all the time, but I'm just saying, I found out that wearing a hat...
Yeah.
I've never seen your hair.
No, you don't want to see it.
I've literally never seen your hair.
I'm just saying... I was on Facebook at a gathering and at Zeke's on Harford Road, and a lady got on there and said, "That is disgusting that there are people," and half of us were wearing hats.
Right.
And she said, in an eating establishment, you should not wear a hat.
Remember Tony Soprano?
What are we, an old Western?
Do you remember Tony Soprano when he got up from his table and told this kid to take off his hat?
Wow.
And the kid was blanking his pants?
Right.
You don't remember that? That
I
was like
do
season
remember
one
it. You're
or
right.
season two of Soprano.
Right.
Ah, I love that show.
Me
love
too.
That moment.
Me too.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess it's supposed to be. But it's casual. This is a casual joint.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
So is Zeke.
So this person, you know, needs to get a grip.
You're right.
We're Cocos. Only nice people allowed. It says so on the door. So they let Max in. They let Rasig in. I don't know what I'm doing in here. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at Jiffy Lube. We have new sponsors. I got to get some swag for Jiffy Lube. We got oil changes. Also, our 25th anniversary brought to you by Curio Wellness. I had Wendy Bronfine on talking about the science behind cannabis this week. They are presenting our 25th anniversary. Number 24 are our live shows from the barn. Number 23 coming up next week, some charity stuff. And counting them down, 25 greatest moments. Time will not dim the glory of your deeds, including Max, who at one point made me best of Baltimore. But
But then the mastication happened.
Yeah, then I started to eat on the air, and bad things happened. Get out of here and get a crab cake. It's Colts week. It's Oriole playoff week. I hope you got your tickets. They were not cheap. Did you guys get Orioles playoff tickets?
No.
They were a little pricey.
I heard. And hard to get.
I went online and like I had them on my screen, and I went into my wife and I'm like, do we really want three tickets on the roof for game 6 of the ALCS? That's the game you really want to be at. Game 6 of the ALCS. Because it's always 3-2.
Right.
And it could be a clinch night.
Right.
That would be the night we could go to the World Series. So if I was going to buy one ticket for one night, I was going to try game 6 of the ALCS.
I was with you with the Phillies clincher.
That's right.
I was with you in Philly for
You went in 93 when Tommy Green pitched?
It was an amazing
You went to the game with me that night. I've done things with him that I don't even remember I did.
Yeah.
Danny Jackson was ripping his shirt
off.
Yes,
I was at that game
with
you.
You were at that game with me.
You invited me to that game. It was one of my favorite sporting events I've ever been to.
I bought his friendship. I did.
No. Never.
Max Weiss and Rasig, it's so good to have you both together on the show. Because, it's really nice.
A lot of fun.
Nothing better than friends.
Thank you.
She can't make me best of Baltimore because we're friends. I'm Nestor. We're WNST. Back for more from Coco's right after this. Stay with us.